I want to welcome everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And if any of you were at the conference, you might have heard that we have 24 ongoing affinity groups, which is great. And one of the biggest pleasures of my experience here is working with the chairs and, of course, all of you. And you happen to have an exceptional chair, Jeff Lev. Hello, JFS Detroit. Hey. And he will lead us in this discussion. And I just want to make sure that everyone puts their communities next to their name so we know where you're calling in from. If you don't remember how to do that, you right click and go to rename and then rename yourself. I'll do the same. So we had 22 people signed up for this. But I say every small group is a gift. So let's go.
Well, hi, everybody. So I let Lisa know and some other network people know that I'm actually leaving Jewish Family Service of Detroit at the end of May. So I'm going to be joining, I'm staying with Human Services, but it's a non-Jewish human service agency. It's called Leader Dogs for the Blind, and it's the third largest guide dog school in the country. It just happens to be right across the street from me. So really excited about that opportunity. And sorry to leave the network, but as I told Ruben, I'm going to stay involved. So I'm in the budget and finance committee at NJHSA, and I'll stay on that. I'll stick on a federation committee that I'm on here in Detroit. And once Perry, my boss, forgives me, I'll probably get back on the JFS board, which is where I got my start 9 years ago. So leaving the agency, but definitely not leaving the community. However, I can be helpful to this affinity group or to any affinity group. Of course, I will be. And I'm a big believer in how about interfaith collaboration. So already I've connected the staff here at JFS Detroit to other nonprofits in Metro Detroit, because we can definitely learn from one another and we don't have to have a J in our name to do that. So I look forward to keeping in touch with people, even though I won't be working at a JFS anymore. That, like, who cares about me? That's enough about me. Lisa might be calling your name to take over as the chair for this group. And I think some people have volunteered. So just procedurally, that's an issue that we have to resolve. In terms of the agenda for today, we put out a survey.
I just want to say that some of you filled out the survey and said you were interested in being chair. It's not like I'm calling out. If you're interested, then I'll reach out to you. If any of you didn't complete this survey, but are interested, just email me. The only thing is that, of course, your supervisor, whoever, your CEO, just needs to make sure that it's okay, because it does take a little bit of time, I guess. You have to think about what we want to talk about, and then I write the, you know, invitations and do all of that.
It's really, like, it's not that much time. Lisa does all the work, which, like, I don't know how she does it for 26 groups, but she does it. So congrats to her and thanks to her. Yeah, it's not a big time commitment.
Right. I just wanted to throw that out there. Okay.
Thank you. Through that survey, we heard, you know, people wanted to talk about claims conference, and we actually talked about the possibility of bringing claims conference to one of these sessions. But I suggested that before we do that, like, before we air our dirty laundry, let's, like, show our dirty laundry to one another. And if we can distill questions, comments, concerns, even complaints about the current claims conference process, I think it would be very reasonable for us to reach out to claims conference and say, hey, can you send somebody to this Zoom room and give us a forum to talk about that?
So from my perspective, we did that with the Holocaust Survivor Professionals Affinity Group. We brought them, and there were around 100 people on the call, and they listened. They got all the questions in advance and they answered everything. And then they talked, and they were so happy to do it, because they want to make things better for you all. It may not seem that way sometimes, but they really do. So if everyone complains about the same thing, they make changes.
Just right. And I speculate, I don't speculate, I know that the issues and concerns we might have are different from the issues and concerns that our colleagues in the Holocaust Survivor Services group have.
Okay.
Because from a client perspective, it's different than what I'll call the back office perspective. So, hey, I don't like this thing about Diamond, or I don't like that thing about Flux, or whatever it is. Like, the social workers probably care less about that. So that's enough of me talking. I think it's just a good time to brainstorm like what's working well in the claims conference relationship, what isn't. And one of the things that I want to talk about is the advance process. So curious to hear how people are taking advantage of that, but I can hold that for later. So please, somebody else, take the mic.
Anyone have any concerns with the claims conference? Anything that they struggle with, want to talk about? Because that was what most people on this survey said they wanted to talk about. So let's hear it.
Are you off the claims conference? Yeah, we are. I'm Cheyenne. I'm with JFS Colorado. I haven't been here for, it's been almost 2 years now, and we have a long-term, nearly 20-year employee who handles the finance side of our claims conference, so I'm not as familiar with it in the weeds day-to-day. However, what I do know is, in response to what Jeff said, we do receive the advance. It is a bit of a trial. Usually it's, you know, there's something going on and they had something that felt that kind of circled back on their end. It didn't come through because of something bouncing back and we didn't get the notification, and we're fine from a cash flow right now. But sometimes that is very painful to not have that up front, because some of the fees are definitely large. We do have some issues that I am aware of that I hear consistently. Our CEO signs all of our contracts, so she is the signer on all the stuff. And it always seems like we think we've signed everything, then there's two more things to sign, and there's just a lot of all of the back and forth that feels like we think we're done with all of the little details, and yet there's still something else that's kind of outstanding that we weren't quite aware of. And so, you know, like I said, I'm not in the weeds every single day with it, and they definitely are, and I've just kind of asked them to give me a little bit of feedback if there's some things they want me to bring up as well. But it is, you know, lots and lots of red tape for sure. Lots of tricky things to do on our side. And that's what we've experienced. We have a great relationship with the person that we work with there. And I know that she's always very accommodating. We had somebody out unexpectedly when we were going through our budget upload process, and she worked with us really well. And so I think the relationship there is really good.
Yeah, for us, like, we're very lucky not to have cash flow issues. We have plenty of liquidity. But for me, I just don't like having. So, you know, sometimes they owe us for up to 7 months of service, right? Mm. So we have 2 months to report at the end of a quarter. And then sometimes it takes them up to 60 days to pay. I just don't like having a 7 month old receivable. So we tend to size our advances so that they never owe us for more than a quarter. And there's also some art and science, like, because we have a May year end, I don't want to show a huge liability to claims conference, but I also don't want to show a huge receivable either. So, and the liability doesn't offset the receivable, at least from our gap homework. So we have to show both. In other words, the balance sheet just gets grossed up, but the claims conference has been super flexible in terms of liquidity. And for whatever reason, the hoops you jump through for the advance are many fewer than the hoops you have to jump through to actually get paid.
I agree. And Jeff, we do a 50%, I think, and then a 25% something. So we're usually kind of on the plus side of, you know, and then, like you said, as it kind of gets closer to our fiscal year, and which is, of course, in the middle of the calendar year grant process, you know, we try to kind of manage that. So the receivable is kind of small, and yeah, evens out the balance sheet for sure. So
I have a question. Steve Brown with JFS of Dallas. Been here about 14 months. For us, our claims conference seems to be a relatively small amount. I'm not sure how that compares to Detroit or Colorado. I mean, our total budget is about $300,000 for the claims conference program. So is that considered a really small program? Because we don't get an advance. We do, you know, the reimbursement billing. Most of our expense is the home health care, and so that we have, you know, one employee that spends about 20% of their time on the program, and then the other piece is covered through the claims conference, through the home health care. Is that typical, or are we the outlier?
Good question.
So, I mean, my gut reaction is that you're probably on the smaller side. So JFS in Detroit, we do about 6 million. And I thought we were like the big kid on the block. And then in Atlanta, before the pandemic, I met one of my colleagues in Melbourne, Australia, I think. And they do like $18 million a year with Claims Conference. So I'm
Thought that like New York and Los Angeles would be the larger program.
I bet Miami has a ton.
Well, let's find out. What are people's Claims Conference monies? You can put it in the chat. You can tell us.
Cindy from Pittsburgh. Oh, I'm sorry. Cindy from Pittsburgh. We have about a 500,000. So we too are very small.
Mm-hmm. Southern New Jersey. We're in the Cherry Hill area. We're at 1.5 million or so.
San Diego. Go ahead. San Diego, 3 million.
So Bernadette, you go.
San Diego is 3 million.
Mm-hmm. And Colorado?
Yeah, we're just under 1.5.
And what about the Sun Coast? Do you even know yet, Todd?
I do not know, Lisa.
Yeah, he just got there. Southern New Jersey, did you tell us? Oh, it's the same. Yeah. It's the same. Yeah.
Yep.
And Kristen, you're in Rochester, right?
Yeah, we don't have a receivable with the Claims Conference.
How large is the budget with them?
The organizational budget, Stephen?
No, so you don't have a Claims Conference budget at all?
Me, Kristen?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, no, we don't. Yes, we just don't have that line of we don't have that transaction.
But you do get, so you don't get any money from the Claims Conference?
Correct.
Okay, so this conversation may not be of interest to you, or it may be.
No, yeah, no, I wasn't sure what the topics would be. I mean, this specific topic is not necessarily relevant to me.
Kristen, I'm curious, are there just not survivors in Rochester?
So we, at one time, settled several refugees, but that's no longer a program of this specific agency. I'm actually not sure if other agencies locally are settling refugees, but we are not.
Well, this is more about Holocaust survivors.
Yeah.
Right. So Isabel, are you Rails?
Yes. Hello. Good morning. Good afternoon. I'm sorry, my camera is not working. I am JFS in Boca. Our budget is about 10 million.
10 million.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you win.
Did she say Brooklyn? Is that where that is?
No,
Boca Raton. Okay. Yeah. Another area I would expect rather large program.
Right. So what are your big issues with the large program? Do you have any?
Well, I've been managing the program for about 7 years. You know, we have grown. I started with a couple million dollars, and major issues that I really, you know, can report so far. We have a good grasp, but the payments are prompt after submission of the reports every quarter. So, you know, I'm listening around, and I'm frankly a little surprised, right? Having carrying a receivable, as Jeff was saying, for months on. So, you know, I'm eager to hear what else is happening. I mean, really, no major issues to report on my side, on our side.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if that has to do with the person that you work with at the conference itself, because maybe we do have different representatives. For San Diego, it was a challenge. We did carry accounts receivable for a very, very long time. The process is not necessarily streamlined as we want it to be in terms of what exactly is it like for this claim, you can get away with not submitting XYZ, but the next time you submit, then there's a change. So streamlining and be specific about exactly what fits for everybody was an issue for us. So we did carry accounts receivable for a very, very long time. And it was even prior to for San Diego, getting an advance was new to us last year. We never had an advance, so we always was out for a long time without any revenues coming from that area. We took over Orange County, started January of this year. So we have both San Diego and Orange County now, and we are still able to get the event. So that's good news for us because it had been really tight to try to manage both San Diego and Orange County together. But we're kind of, you know, waiting to see what it's going to look like because now we're a combined program. We don't have two contracts. It's one for both regions. And be interesting to see what our first claim looks like and how that's treated as we submit that. So more to be revealed.
Isn't Orange County far from San Diego?
It's a neighboring county.
Okay. So how your social workers go to Orange County and do
it
all
was
the-
a whole it was a whole program that we took on. So there are they have a team there that are now San Diego employees.
Oh, I see.
We took over the TIE program from Orange County Federation, which was a program that's not necessarily in the wheelhouse. And we were able to, we had the bandwidth to take it on.
But I think your comment about your the person that you work with is probably very true. You know, depending on who is your, I don't know what they're called, your contact. Do you want to say something, Deborah?
So are most of the issues then with the process of the reimbursement or what are the, I know the issues that I hear about from the person that runs our program is more of the restrictions of finding different types of expenses that qualify. Getting the people to qualify because we have some other Holocaust program money we deal with, Kavod, Chef, that we end up using. We try to use the claims conference first, and then the people who are survivors but may not qualify through the claims conference, then we use these other fundings. That seems to be our biggest issue. Like I said, we don't have a large program, so our receivable doesn't get, it takes a while to get the money, but it's just not a big issue for us because of the size of the program. Mm-hmm.
So I think those are the same things that delay claims, you know, the qualification and the specificity that you have to provide information and information about the people and following the dollars with the people and how they qualify, that those are the things that really delay our claim. Mm-hmm. So it's not very different from what you're experiencing.
300,000 or 1.5 million or whatever you said, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cindy.
No, I was just going to say, it kind of validates now by everybody telling us how much the claims conference, we think it's a lot of work for not a whole lot of money. And as we go through, you know, we have a special audit we have to do. They come in and they audit us. We go through that diamond system is not our best friend. And we, like we said, we get now it's probably going to be even less than $500,000. But I understand now why the processes are in place. With some of the larger contracts, it now begins to make more sense. We just felt like, you know, they're asking for a whole lot and we are not getting a whole lot in return. Hmm. But now it makes more sense to us.
I think that's the way it is with every government contract. It's a lot of work, you know, depending on how much money you have. And the smaller amount, it's the same amount of work, you know.
And Cindy, I think you bring up a good point. The additional audit is pretty onerous for us. You know, it is certainly an expense that we're allowed to claim against, but it takes part of our admin funding away to use that. But, you know, it's an extra step for sure that isn't part of our single audit, which we obviously have to do that as well. But
mm-hmm. No, totally agree. And where your contract is at least large enough, our audit, our admin can't even cover our audit. So we pay for that audit. Mm-hmm. Because our admin is teeny tiny, as is our case management, because it's all based on the amount of money that you actually right. give in. And so what we're finding is that a lot of our actual survivors aren't needing the services as much as they need the case management. So we too are having to find alternate funding for a case manager to see these clients, the survivors. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Steve's finding That's probably the same case for you.
It is, because as you said, the admin is very small. The case management allowance is very small. So we do look for other types of funding to support the Holocaust Survivor Program, because the claims conference, although they are the biggest piece of it, we still have to piecemeal together. The audit, as far, we don't charge the audit at all, because it's just, there's just no funding in there for it. So as far as that goes, that's it's a drain, but it's not a big program for us. So some of our other programs, obviously our mental health programs are our biggest issues. Maybe that's for a future conversation. But I have much more issues with that than the claims conference, other than the fact that they want to audit us and then they want to audit us again. It's like, did my auditor not do a good enough audit for them that now they want to audit me? You know, choose one or the other.
Question with regard to the extent of the audit procedures that everyone is undertaking for the claims conference. We, for the past few years, have had our external auditor do, it's really an agreed upon procedures review, which they prepare specifically for our claims conference funding. And then we submit that to the claims conference. I was wondering if that is similar across the other agencies, or if, you know, how the extent to which it's a full-blown audit, or if it's more of an agreed-upon procedures review that you're performing in addition to your regular audit for the purposes of the claims conference.
I know for us, it's an additional procedure that they're doing. They're looking at some of the transactions, because as they would with any of our, we require a single audit as well, because we're involved in a few other government programs. So they try to include the claims conference in as much of their regular auditing procedures as they can when they're testing, and because they do have to issue a separate letter on their, you know, they're taking some risks. The auditors are providing that service. So, but they try to assimilate claims conference more than they normally would a program that size for us. Is our budget maybe $10 million, and that's $300,000. That would normally be an immaterial piece almost, but they try to assimilate as much as they can of the claims conference into it, so that way they get comfort in providing the compliance letter, basically, for claims conference.
That's similar for San Diego as well. We have a... it's not a separate engagement, but there's a separate look, and they provide a separate report for claims conference.
Okay.
I'll say, and I have a question for you, Stephen and Bernadette. For us, our fiscal year end is June. We just finished up our claims conference audit, and I think because we had done two last year, because it wasn't done and when it needed to be. And so I think we're on kind of a weird timing. And so it's not coinciding with our annual audit, which will happen at the end of August for our organizational audit. So getting that on track, I think, is a really great idea. We did do a separate engagement. It was a 3-day engagement. They came in, treated it very similarly to a single audit, did some schedules and stuff. And so they did issue their compliance requirement letter. Basically, it's not as extensive as a single audit, but the timing is off. And so are you, for the timing of when you're doing your audit for the claims conference, do you have a similar fiscal year end, and are you rolling it into your organizational audit like at, you know, a normal fall audit time, or how is that timing working for you?
We roll it into our regular audit in the fall. And it's, you know, when we do our contract for our regular audit, we just kind of roll that in there. It's separately called out in our engagement letter, and you know, they take a little deeper dive, not extensive as a single audit, but they do issue a separate letter for it.
I'm trying to remember. It feels like they said the deadline was August or something like that. Or are you doing calendar year 2020 then, in this upcoming August then, for the timing of your additional claims conference work?
No, it follows our fiscal year. what, so we're kind of in the middle of two contracts at that time, because the claims conference is January through December, and our fiscal year is June 30. So whatever we do at June 30 is what we include in our audit. So okay. The next half of it, yeah. So the next half of it, you know, will run with the regular cycle as well.
Okay, so let me just clarify. So your fiscal year end is in June. And so when you do your upcoming claim conference portion, you'll be doing your fiscal year, which will be half of one grant and half of the mm-hmm. other grant?
Correct.
Ah, that's what we're doing wrong. Okay, that would be a whole lot easier for us, because
we're
doing the whole calendar year, and it's totally off of all of our grant, all of our fiscal year cycles.
Yeah, so. you'll always be following that cycle. So we just cut it off at June 30, report what's at June 30, and then start off with half of the other contract the remainder of the year.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we too were doing it the same way you were doing it, Cheyenne. And I didn't know that was an option, that we could do it the other way. So I guess that's something to ask, because we just finished up our 2020 audit. Matter of fact, we were a little late. So it was finished up on April 30th. But now I'm curious to know if we can work it on our fiscal year, which is June 30th.
Well, if that's the case, Bernadette, you just saved a lot of people a lot of aggravation and time. Hooray for this
opinion. Yes, thank you.
That's great. So, you know, Jeff, we don't have to spend the whole time talking about claims conference if people don't want to, I'm sure. Yeah, that was just something that had come up. So, you know, if anyone has anything else they want to talk about, this is the time and place.
Is anyone out there, just as a question, using the Intact as their general ledger system? Because I just took a look at it at the conference, and then I had them do a demo for me in the last week or so. We're currently using MIP accounting, and I've used MIP fund accounting previously at another nonprofit. It was not a social service agency, but I'm just not really happy with the reporting and the usability of it. So I've looked at Intact, and I'm wondering if anybody else there is out there using Intact and likes it, hates it, whatever.
So we're in the process of implementing it. We were on stage 300 for, I don't know, 5 years, and it's definitely at the end of its useful life. So we chose Intact. We didn't do an RFP per se, but we looked at MIP. We looked at the Blackbaud product, Financial Edge, I think it's called. And for a variety of reasons, we went with Intact. And actually the Intact rep reached out, wanted to like come to this group. So we'll schedule a time. It's like we might have the claims conference come. We will have the Intact person come. And I know you had a demo, but maybe it'll be a more in-depth conversation.
But we're going to do a pop-up at one point soon, probably maybe next month.
So, I mean, we're early in the early going of the implementation. So far, it's going fine. The factors for us, one is that we use ADP for payroll, and there's an API with ADP. So the integration was a big selling point. Another selling point is that we've known our implementation consultant for many years and our VAR for many years. And I think MIP in particular, we were worried about some of the automation that would be available or lack thereof.
What I'm surprised about is we have MIP, and we also have FR50, which is their development program, and the two don't talk to each other, which is ridiculous. But you know, they're both Abila products. But we're now, I know our development is going to Razor's Edge, which is the Blackbaud product, and we were told it will work with Intact. As far as having it directly integrate.
Intact seems to me to be like the premier nonprofit accounting software. Like they say they have, and of course they all say this, but they say they have the largest nonprofit client base. They say that the software was developed specifically for nonprofit. And if you're using MIP and aren't happy with it, I think, you know, Financial Edge and Sage Intact are the couple other logical choices. Right.
They are working with a lot of nonprofits, actually, Sage Intact. So, like, big ones, too, like Jewish Board of Family and Children's Services, which I think is the largest human service agency in the country. Anyway, so they're working with, they use Sage Intact.
We are on Financial Edge. Our development team is in the process, actually going live next week, I think, of moving to Virtuous off of Razor's Edge because they were very unhappy with Razor's Edge and some of the functionality. And so I've heard that that's not uncommon, that people may have started with both products and then the development, because the development side is just so much more expensive on Razor's Edge. And so they're moving away from Razor's Edge to Virtuous, but we're staying on Financial Edge, and we will get those reports to be able to import in. So.
What do other agencies use?
San Diego, we are on Financial Edge and Razor's Edge.
Mm-hmm. Do the two work well together?
They're not integrated. They're not integrated. And the reason for that is that, well, I inherited a system that was not in the cloud. There's not cloud-based. So we just went, so our Razor's Edge was cloud-based. Financial Edge wasn't, it wasn't our server. And so we just went to the cloud a month ago. So in the hopes that the two systems, we can figure out how to have the two systems talk to each other. So we'll see how that's gonna work, but we're not there yet.
I tell you, Bernadette, you're so relaxed and calm. There's like a lot's going on. She's just, we'll see.
Welcome to life in San Diego. Are you kidding me?
I guess that's what it is. We all need to move there. Listen,
it's 74 and sunny 345 days a year.
Yeah, I guess you're right. So what about Southern New Jersey? What do you guys have?
The weather is not good there.
Yeah. It's raining today. It's
pretty rainy today.
So it's the man from Detroit, right? Yeah.
We use MIP for our accounting system, and which we're not thrilled with. We are considering alternatives, and we use Blackboard CRM as our donor database, which we do import transactions into MIP, so that works quite well for us.
That's good. Anyone else want to tell us what they use or if it works or how it's going?
Hi, well, this is Todd from the Sun Coast, where it's only 89 today. So
where are you on the Sun
Sarasota.
Coast? Oh, Sarasota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I inherited MIP, and I'm really glad to hear some of the comments, because I've used several things from Oracle to Financial Edge. And I was a big fan of Financial Edge. MIP has been a nightmare in my few short weeks here. We outsource payroll, so that's a problem. We use Donor Perfect on the development side. There's no integration. So that's a quick recap of where I'm at, but really interested hearing what others use. I'm hearing Financial Edge and the Sage product.
Sage Intact.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sage Intact, I think the network, are they partners with us, and people get a discount? I guess I can find that out. There's a discount.
I think not yet. Last time we talked about it, you guys were negotiating.
Okay, we're negotiating. Well, if I have people who are interested, we'll probably get it. So that would be great. So after this pop-up, maybe you'll decide what you want to do. We'll do it relatively soon then. Cindy, what's Pittsburgh use? Did you tell us?
No, I did not. We use MIP or Abilla. And actually, we just implemented it about 4 or 5 years ago. And it's horrible. But like anything, you put in so much time and effort, it's like, I feel like I need to stay with it for the time being, because it was a really difficult conversion. Now we use Blackbaud for our fundraising or development. It is not integrated. They are switching to, and I, for the life of me, I can't remember what it is that they'll start to implement as of July 1. But yeah, we too are struggling with MIP. I just, again, it's because of laziness that nobody wants to even think about starting over again.
Yeah, I bet.
It's a heavy lift.
It is a heavy lift.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh's had its ups and downs in the last few years. So we've been, as far as, you know, the community having its difficulties. So we've all put efforts forward just to stabilize as much as we could.
Are you talking about financially or are you talking about emotionally?
No, emotionally, emotionally.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the reporting part of MIP that just gives me headaches. Trying to get the data out and get the data out correctly for the right periods, for the right group of time. The reports, you have to build them yourself. And I found that if the accounts, when they were originally set up 15 years ago by, you know, whoever, were not set up correctly, then you can't get your cash flow to work. So, I mean, I run a cash flow statement that I have two lines that say, make sure you take the inverse of this number because it will not treat it as a negative when it should be. And I just built the report and I converted it into Excel and I invert the number and voila, my cash flow works.
The board doesn't have any, like, what's this on the cash flow statement called? Plug? Don't worry about
that. Don't worry about that. No, I literally have instructions on that line and there's two lines that say, you know, take this number, subtract the number above it, and then invert it. So, I mean, that's what I've been, I got it to work, and it works consistently doing that, but that's crazy.
Yeah.
And you can get tripped up on the dates. I mean, especially if you don't close quickly your years, you have to end up keeping it open longer, and then your balance sheet wants to pick up, you know, a year and a half ago's balances instead of the current year's balances. So just their reporting is not stellar.
I'll go a step beyond, again, maybe because I'm so new, but at least with Financial Edge, I could literally close and lock the month. Can't do that in MIP. So that's another concern I have, that someone's going to inadvertently post to a prior period.
Who is anyone? Who would be posting besides you?
Accounts payable, accounts receivable.
What about Rails? Do we know what you guys are using, Isabella?
Yes, we use Financial Edge, Sage Intergy, and Donor Perfect, and they are not integrated. A question that I have, though, is for the reporting itself for Diamond. I mean, even though we have a budget of almost $10 million, we still do everything manually. And it's all a spreadsheet, Excel, week by week, client by client, and something that I would really been desperately searching or, you know, asking around is what is out there that can improve the reporting process, because the reporting process into Diamond is very, very time consuming and it's very detailed. And I don't know if anybody else is doing it the same way as we are doing it, everything manually, even the CSV reports, you know, you have to pull on the client ID per client, per services per week. So that's a question that I would like, you know, to leave out there. If anybody from any other agency can share how their reporting goes every quarter.
Yeah, we don't have anything outside of Diamond. It's painful, but that's what we use.
But do you do what Isabella does, which is manually mm-hmm. write everything mm-hmm. down, and then you have to enter it? Is that what?
Yes.
So that's what you do too. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what Cheyenne does? Is that the nod, Isabella? Yeah, I think that's the issue. Everyone mm-hmm. has to do that.
Yeah, I think that a couple years ago in a claims conference. One of the conferences, I heard Philadelphia was using a program that they have created, and they were given it, or actually they had it available, and they said that they have integrated it so the reporting was very easily. You put it in directly. And I got a card from the person. I contacted a couple of times, but I just never heard back. And I know there are other agencies that have created their own kind of software, but you know, I just can't believe that it's a better, easier way. I mean, it just takes one error in the, you know, we run multiple tables and sort the data in a way, you know, to double check and triple check that everything we're inputting manually is correct. But it's a tremendous amount of work. And
I think it was either Paul Grosch or David Rosenberg. Do either of those names sound right to you, Isabella? That presented mm-hmm. about that software that they had to integrate with Diamond?
I'm sure it was Paul and not David.
Okay, so Paul. So I will reach out to him and I'll put the two of you together. Or I'll reach out to him privately, see if he has it, and if it's something that's interesting, yeah, maybe so he can have a small meeting with those of you that are interested. Yeah.
I think he and his agency have done a lot of work in terms of integrating systems. And I think that they have what I would call like a bona fide mathematician or computer scientist on staff to build those linkages. And of course, like that's a luxury of being an agency that size. They can afford that and they can get leverage from that position across multiple programs. But from my perspective, Philly is like super sophisticated when it comes to their systems.
So maybe we can talk him into,
maybe we can talk him into giving us licenses to use their product.
And I remember the same thing that Jeff just mentioned, that they have a mathematician, somebody that was able to develop that in there. Yes.
Well, maybe they are doing something with that, that they are expanding it. I can certainly reach out and ask and get back to everyone if that would be something you'd be interested in. Yeah.
I can say Southern New Jersey doesn't have our own software, but we use a lot of extensive spreadsheets that are for our day-to-day data entry. And they're formatted such that when the time comes, they are uploaded into Diamond. So the day-to-day data entry of every hour and every rate and of every week of every client is extremely time consuming, but we are able to get it into Diamond pretty quickly and generally efficiently. And that's all done with like spreadsheets and pivot tables and things like that.
Yeah, that's basically how we do it too. We actually send the vendors a template on how we expect the invoices to come to us. So the invoices we must receive a spreadsheet with certain fields in it. And then the backup will be the invoices and the timesheets. So it's a packet that we receive every time we pay. But then at the end of the quarter, of course, I have we have people that process these spreadsheets and everything. And at the end of each quarter, I put everything together and I go through it again. And you know, sometimes there are things that I have to adjust and things that happen. So we do the same. Pivot tables. I run a lot of pivot tables to make sure that each client is within allowance every week. But that all you have to transform to a CSV to upload into Diamond. And then, of course, before uploading into Diamond, it doesn't upload with the client's name, but with the client ID. You have to eliminate the client name, make sure that the client ID is correct. So yes, it's kind of, you know, we know how to do it at this point, but I always like, I know there is a better way to do it. And I definitely know there has to be a better way to do this.
You know, as I was hearing you guys talk, we have a slightly different software, but I was just chatting with our finance person who handles it. And we have, for our mental health billing, we have, you know, a mental health billing system, and we have converted it to work on our grant side as well. So all of our Holocaust survivors are entered as clients within this system, kind of like any other of our clients would. And if you have a medical billing software, you know that you would put in your client, you'd put in the service that they have, and your payer is your insurance or Medicaid or Medicare or whatever. And so we've converted that software for our Holocaust survivors, where they're entered in with the service that we provide for them. The information is there. We use it as a check request system for our accounts payable, and then we can export that information and import it into Diamond. And so I don't know that it's much better, because there's a lot of hand entering there, but it's part of our, you know, we get the invoice from the home care provider, we put it into our CareLogic software. That's how we get the check request to pay that bill. And then the client information is already in there, and we do use that to get into Diamond. I don't know if that's any better, but it takes out a couple of steps from the AP side, at least for us, and kind of at least we're not using two different systems there. That client information exists in one place. So I don't
ahead.
Would that work, Isabella? Something like that?
Might be better to pursue and hear what Philadelphia is doing. I'm very interested in hearing what they have going on, because certainly we're adding some steps there for sure. It's maybe a little bit better than complete manual, but it sounds like there may be some even better systems out there I'd love to hear about.
Right, the same.
Well, I don't envy you all. It's a tough, I think that's a tough job, being the CFO.
Anything else on anybody's mind?
Doesn't have to be claims conference. People feel flush with the year. Money's coming in. Okay, that's good. People aren't worried about, 2021. Are we thinking about 2022 yet?
Well, our year end is July 31st, so... We're getting ready for FY22 now. We're budgeting and getting everything ready.
Are you changing things around? Are you being really conservative? Do you think you're going to get a lot more money in?
The hardest part for us is being able to figure out. We've been doing a lot of work for the cities and counties on their housing assistance programs, some large dollars there. And most of the programs that we're in the middle of now are worked out to be almost exactly half a year for us. So I've got to budget the second half of, you know, the program for this year that ends in December is, you know, 5 months for us into FY22. You know, we had PPP, the hardest part is we had PPP money last year that was, you know, we got the cash in FY20. We became revenue for us in FY21 when we didn't have the cash anymore because we spent the cash to keep us open. But we had the revenue. So this year is kind of deceiving when you look at it. Our net income looks great, you know, the net change in assets. But when in reality, you know, they say we're carrying $1 million in net, what I would call net income. And, you know, the cash isn't there. And the cash isn't there, well, it's because we got the cash last year and we spent it. And I'm adjusting to this carryover monies. There are a lot of monies also that we get in May and in June of our year that where the cash comes in then and you record the grants and the revenue then. And of course, all that money is going to be spent in fiscal year next. And just getting that all sorted out in my head. Like I said, it's new for me. Mm-hmm. I started with JFS in March of last year. And, you know, it was 5 months before I ever got into the office. Mm-hmm. And my whole accounting staff was new. We all basically started within a month of each other. It was a full turnover. So it's been a challenge. We've had a lot of challenges because of that, and budgeting. You know, learning the different departments, learning what, you know, what older adults is. I mean, it's not a concept. I came from a medical background. I've been in healthcare for about 30 years with, you know, one nonprofit FQHC and other. My other prior time was with physician networks. So that were privately owned by the physicians. So it was very different for me having to figure out all of the nonprofit things and then the social services side of it.
Right.
So that's been the big challenge for me. Mm-hmm.
So I echo what Stephen is saying with regards to cash flow. That's a very difficult conversation if you're not an accountant. And so I see where a lot of us is going to have that carryover because you're recognizing revenue different from the year that you spend the cash in. And so, you know, for those agencies that don't have that cash or some cash to lean on, it might create some issues for many agencies because of the timing of the cash and the revenues. So we're not, I mean, we don't have the cash flow issue, but I'm cognizant that, you know, if we have a lot of ARs in the future, which really takes up a lot of your cash flow, that could become an issue later on for some agencies, but we're definitely keeping a close eye on that.
I think one of my issues is that it's expressing to the board where the cash is, because they immediately see $1 million in net income and they say, oh good, let's reserve some cash. Well, the cash is already spent, fellas. That's the thing. It's explaining it to not necessarily financial people, and explaining that, you know, yes, we want to reserve cash. We want to, because we really don't have a cash flow problem as far as from an operations standpoint. We're actually okay. But I'm constantly feeling the pressure of the board wanting to take my free operating cash and reserve it, mm-hmm. which basically then means when I actually need it, I'm going to have to go and say, oh, guys, I need this money. And what's the problem? Mm-hmm. No, it's not a problem. You took it away. Mm-hmm. And it was my operating cash. So I think that's what I'm getting used to.
Mm-hmm. What are other people's fiscal years? Are they June to July to June? Or are they
May here?
Oh, May? Huh.
Ours is September, end of September.
And they're just so odd with these fiscal years, right? And that makes the cash flow, I think, probably.
I think the auditors love it, though, because it gives them work during their slower seasons.
Oh, haha, maybe you're right.
Yeah,
we're through June 30.
What? June 30?
June 30. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're through August.
Through August. Mm-hmm. Well, question, I know you bring up important point, Stephen. That's it. Cheyenne. Yeah.
I have a question for those on Financial Edge. We are in our budgeting process as well, and we're changing budgeting software. What budgeting software do you use, or what program do you use that for those that are on Financial Edge? Go ahead, Edsel.
Yes, we are on Financial Edge, but I am the fiscal grant supervisor. My CFO will be the best to answer that one. We are in the process right now of doing the budget. So I just wanted to let you know that we're in Financial Edge, but I will have to reach out to him, and I can certainly let you know.
Okay. We currently use Cintage, which is Planning Maestro, and we're moving to possibly the advanced budgeting module that meets up with Financial Edge. I just wondered if anybody's using that.
We use the advanced budgeting module called Microsoft Excel.
And that's the one I use. I built a program last year. Like I said, I was brand new. I'd been here about 2 months, built a program with just all of our departments, all of our funds along the bottom. And I have a mega spreadsheet. And that's about it.
Is everybody pretty much in spreadsheets then?
Yeah, so that's how we do it too, because I review the budget for our department for Holocaust, and what I received is a spreadsheet, but I just wanted to make sure that
we use the advanced budget module that comes with Financial Edge, and we're happy with it. It's very, very detailed.
Yes.
And you know, for the personnel side of it, it's really robust. And we like it. So it's even better for us that we've gone to the cloud with that product as well. So we like ABM, but be prepared to work with a lot of detail month by month to build your budget. But it works when you're really trying to look at your actuals and look at how you budget things. So you kind of get a sense of where you may have gone off track related to the budget. So it's helpful in more ways than one for us.
Yeah, thank you. I'd use it briefly at my prior place, but they had already implemented it. And so they really hadn't gotten it going when I left there. And so, you know, what we're using is very similar to that. And I like that process. Moving from spreadsheets, it's like night and day. Using the budgeting mm-hmm. software is a huge advantage. So if you're on spreadsheets, you should at least consider, you know, if you're able to get a budgeting software. But thank you, Bernadette, for sharing your experience. Since I hadn't had a lot of experience in it, I wondered, you know, the pain points were it. That's really helpful. Thank you.
And so since the personnel for us is our largest, and managing it through ABM is just incredible. because you can just upload like your formulas in there, and it'll calculate a lot of things for you when you can dump it into Excel. So, yeah. I mean, it's a really, really good system, I think.
Bernadette, please remind me. I think if I remember right, when we had ABM, you can go in and see when you're budgeting, you can see the 3-year history of that line item in the budget in that particular department or whatever for the past 3 years to know what you want to do from a trending perspective. Is that correct?
Uh-huh. And then if you want to do some modeling in that system, you can do it as well.
Okay. Hmm. Thank you so much.
Right.
So one of my,
I want to mention that the next call is on July 28th. Based on our conversation here, it sounds like we'll have an opportunity to get together in the interim, specifically with Sage Intacct.
And with Paul, potentially, from Philly.
Right.
Yeah. Todd, did you want to say something before we end? I think.
Yes. One of my challenges is cash flow projections. And right now, the only tool that I have is a cobbled together Excel sheet. And those that use MIP, is there any features in MIP that would help me with my end of year forecast for cash?
I don't use a cash flow through MIP. I also use an Excel spreadsheet. It's just much quicker and much easier, to be honest with you.
That's what I figured. Thanks, Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Jeff, I want to, on behalf of the network and this group, thank you so much for your leadership and your enthusiasm and your insight and your humor. We are going to really miss you.
You're welcome. And thank
I know you'll still be a part, but potentially
I'll still be part of it. I'm not going far, I promise.
Right. I know. We can still reach out, but I really want to thank you. You've been a treasure to work with.
Thanks. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. Okay. So,
all right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Bye. Bye, everyone. We'll see you on the 28th, if not before. Bye.
Thank you.